reading compilations, yes, and we would like to start this week by reflecting on the nature of the unity of holy time, holy place, and holy ritual. Let me start by the historical assertion that I mentioned already. According to biblical literature, there was a temple in Jerusalem for 1,000 years. Now, we may take a little bit or add a little bit, but in general, 10th, 9th, 8th, 7th, 6th century, and at the end of the 6th, 5th, 4th, 3rd, 2nd century BC, and the 1st century of the Common Era, there was a temple in Jerusalem. Naturally, in a course of 1,000 years, one cannot expect a unanimity. One cannot expect only one voice. However, one may expect to ask, what was the common denominator for most of the time? Not for all the time, but for most of the time. What was the common denominator between the people who were cherishing it, serving there, officiating, transmitting ideas, preparing people? The answer to such a question is, let's see what they wrote. Where did they write? In two major places. In the Bible as we know it, in the priestly code, in the priestly history, in the priestly literature, in the priestly Talmudic, quite a lot. However, this is only one portion of our knowledge. The second portion is what we call the literature of the Kohanim Bnei Tzadok from Qumran. As I told you last week, we found the library. We were fortunate enough to find a library of 950 documents, which has one common denominator. All of it, with no exception, is considered to be holy scripture. This is very Kodesh. All what has been found was written and kept and transmitted according to the most strict halakhic orders of how one should transmit a holy scripture. How one should wrap it, how one should write it, how one should put it into the ground if you need to store it. All of it, I underline and accentuate it. Not underline, underline it and accentuate it. All 950 documents were holy scriptures. Now how those 400 divided? In a very simple way, I'm going to explain it without detail. It is divided to four parts. Number one is the Bible, 23 out of 24, as I mentioned, the book of Esther was not found, but all 23 books of the Bible, as we know them according to our tradition, remnants were parts, scrolls, books were found. Basically, if one wished to say anything about it, is that quite a few of the recensions are close to the Septuagint, where there is a difference between the Septuagint and ours. Now the Septuagint was written in Greek, in Egypt, in the course of the 3rd and 2nd century BC. In the biblical tradition, there are numerous occasions where there is a variation or difference of retention. Without making any judgment, we just need to remember historically. The version reflected in the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Bible, that was committed into writing in the 3rd and 2nd century before the Common Era in Egypt, reflects an ancient version. We don't need to think that there is any deliberate change there or any deliberate omission or addition, none whatsoever. They have a recension, and they transmit this recension very faithfully. In Qumran, we found numerous examples that the recension, the Greek recension of the Torah, is similar to the Hebrew recension of the Torah according to Qumran. So, just remember that whatever we have from before the Common Era is more antique, is more ancient than what we have after the Common Era. And the Bible as we have it, Nosach HaMasorah, has been edited in the course of the 1st and 2nd century after the Common Era. What we find in Qumran is 3rd and 2nd century before the Common Era. That's number one. So we have the Bible as we know it with slight variations, very often resembled to the Septuagint. That's number one, and that's no problem there at all. Number two, is a strange language which one may call it like the Bible, but not the Bible. That would be the one that would be called Megillat Yitzchak Bereshit, Apocryphal Genesis. Megillat Yitzchak Noach, like the story of Noach, but in a slightly different. Now this is not as we have it in our Masoretic text, but this is a different version. Now this is not a recension. Recension is when you have a text and there are slight, you know, word here, letter there. What I'm talking now is on a different edition. So we have, if we wish, I guess there's something here and here, a chalk wants to have a special right. I'm sorry? Okay, anyhow, so this one is like Torah. One, as we have it, we like Varish. Number two is Kmos Torah. But what do I mean by Kmos Torah? It's like the book of Shmuel, but not Shmuel as we have it, with additional chapters, for instance, that we don't have in our chapters. I don't want now to make any judgment whether ours is omitted or theirs is edited. I don't want to make any judgment. I just wish to inform that we have two kinds of biblical materials. One is as ours, with slight versions or retentions. The second one is we are familiar with it, but it's different. Like Ezekiel as we have it, and in Qumran we have second Ezekiel. Genesis as we have it, and in Qumran there is second Genesis. And so on and so forth. Shmuel as we have it, in Qumran we have second. Again, without making any judgmental sentences, we just want to know that they have more versions of the Bible than we have. Number three. Here we come to something which we don't know before. Something entirely new. Now this is the mystical liturgical literature, which is called the angelic liturgy. Shirot Olah HaShabbat. Shirot as liturgy, Olah as sacrifice, like Olah HaShabbat, and Shabbat as Shabbat. Shirot Olah HaShabbat, sacrifice, and songs of the Sabbath sacrifice, or angelic liturgy. Now, we have more of that kind. This is only one. The other one is called brachot, blessing. The third one is bracha l'kohen gadol. The fourth one is bracha l'bnei kadosh. We have a whole liturgical literature which has to do with style and perception. And the common denominator of it all that it has angels within. So where you have a text that has angelology, that has angels, and has liturgy, and has beautiful poetical versions, then we call it the number three kind, which would be mystical liturgy. When we have angels, we are talking about mysticism, because it asks to take into consideration invisible entities, which are part of religious life, are part of the service, are part of the liturgy. In Qumran we have a whole library of such angelic liturgy. As I said, part of it is called Shirot Olah HaShabbat, other parts are called blessings, in general, brachot, third part is brachot l'kohanim b'nei tzadok, brachot l'eda, brachot l'nasi, all kinds of blessings. Number four is a problematical one. By the way, in this one, in this beautiful liturgy, most of it, with one exception, we couldn't integrate into our Siddur Tfilah or into our religious world without any problem. And I'll say in a moment what is the one problem that there is. However, before we go to the problem, this one, this particular literature of Talmud, liturgy, hymnology, is very beautiful and has to do with angels, and we could integrate it into the normal reading, singing, praying. However, the number four one, we cannot. Number four is polemical literature. Polemic, that comes from the Greek word polemos, which is war. It's a struggle. Now, there is no way to be polite about it. They are fighting. They are struggling. The people who wrote this literature are fighting very hard, are struggling very hard. While number one, number two, and number three had nothing to do with polemics. Those three parts reflect religious awareness, religious consciousness, mystical religious consciousness, historical religious consciousness. All those three, one can put very quietly into a traditional way with one effect. Number four is very problematic. What's the problem of honesty? It is dividing the world between sons of light and sons of darkness, good ones and evil ones, positive sense and negative sense, asserting that the people who write this literature are Bnei Or, sons of light, and their enemies are Bnei Choshech, sons of darkness. What is it the issue that they are fighting about? Numerous issues, but number one is hegemony and legitimacy. I would like to introduce here the following contention. Mysticism is never written in a vacuum. When one writes mystical literature, very often it would be part of a struggle, part of seeking legitimacy, part of claiming hegemony. But most likely, more often than not, when this legitimacy or hegemony is contested, is taken, has been lost. You remember that I said last week that mysticism very often is the literature of the losers, the literature of the vanquished, the literature of people who realize that the only place that they can perceive justice and honesty and the way things ought to be is within literature, not outside of literature. Because of it, one may say that when there is a dispute, literature would demand. When there is a fight, when there is a struggle, literature would demand. People would say that those who are in power don't need to write literature to legitimize themselves. Those who are out of power do need to do it excessively. The Qumran case is an excellent example for the role of political power and religious power in informing mystical writing. I would say one sentence on the historical background. In the year 175 BC, that is the first third of the second century before the Common Era, the 800 years old legitimacy of the priesthood from the house of Tzadok has been terminated. The last high priest that served with unanimous acceptance of the whole entire Jewish community was Shimon ben Yochanan, who is known in our sources as Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon ben Yochanan was the father, as I mentioned already, of Yehoshua Yazon and Chonio Onai, the one who was supposed to inherit him around the year 175 was his son Chonio Onai. He was deposed by his brother Jacob Yehoshua, and he was dethroned and deposed. Jason, who was an illegitimate heir to the priestly house because he was not an heir according to his father's nomination and according to the family line, he was illegitimate because he bought the priesthood with money from the king Antiochus Epiphanes, was officiating in the temple for about 5 years. In those 5 years, he made Jerusalem into Antiochia, he made Jerusalem into a Greek polis, he defiled the temple, and he complied with the Greek ruler ideas of time and place and holiness. He had to comply with it because he wanted very much to be the high priest, and the person who could have bequested this legitimacy other than his own father was the ruler, the Seleucian ruler Antiochus Epiphanes, or Antiochus Epimanes. Jason didn't last long. However, in the course of his priestly service, he made sure that his brother would not be alive anymore. His brother ran away to Antiochia, which is more or less where Syria is nowadays, and he was assassinated there. His brother's name was, as I said, Chonio III, or Onias III. He was assassinated by a man called Andronicus, who was sent either by Jason, his brother, or by Menelaus, who was the one who came after him inland. There were three Yazon M. Menelau and Alekhinov, those three groups from 175 to 169 were serving in a way that was completely illegitimate, priesthood bought by money, priesthood that was free from all that was sacred until this period. So we are talking on the 70s and the 60s of the second century. In this period, the House of Tzadok lost its legitimacy and the House of Hashmonai stepped forward in order to rectify the atrocities that have been made in the temple. This is the period where the Antiochian kings had the opportunity to impose their calendar, to make the people to go on lunar calendar, and the Antiochian kings were very strong kings. Between 167 and 164, the Hashmonaim, known also as Maccabim, were fighting very harshly against the Antiochian ruling and against the evil priesthood in the temple. They were trying to kill each other, they were trying to destroy each other, they were trying to change the order. It took them quite a long time, 4 years of war, quite a lot. At the end of it, it didn't go very well. It took another 10 years before a new legitimacy has been instituted in Jerusalem. It is 162 that Jonathan Hashmonai, was instituted as a ruler in Jerusalem. Now, the word ruler should be with parentheses. He is a ruler under Seleucian rule. He is no independent ruler. Don't buy the story that there was ever an independent ruler in the second century before the common era or in any other century of antiquity. The imperial rule was the Seleucian, the Selectic, Beth-Selectic, and they were very strong. And they were recruiting local powers to their benefit because they themselves were fighting. Alexander Balas, Demetrius, the heirs of the Antiochians were fighting on the legitimacy of the throne in Syria. They needed local support. Jonathan was helping one side and he was officiating under the auspices of the Seleucian king who nominated him. At the year 152, he was officiating until 142. From 142, his brother Shimon, this is Jonathan, who was assassinated, and 142 was also assassinated. Shimon was assassinated by his brother-in-law, Talmai ben Chabubu, and it went down and deteriorated from there. The Hashmonean family, in the second half of the second century before the Common Era, stepped forward and took illegitimate rule as priests and as kings. According to the Bible, only the priests, the sons of Tzadok, have the right to officiate as high priests. Nobody else. According to the biblical literature, I'm sorry? Will you read the First Chronicles, Ezra and Nehemiah, where there is a long detail of all the priestly families? They are all one, father, son, from Aaron, Elazar, Pinchas, Abishua, Buki, Yogli, Tzadok, 14 generations. The son of Tzadok, Achitub, Achimat, and it goes on like that. It's all detailed, one after the other, with full details in numerous places. The only high priest officiating in the temple in Jerusalem were the Kohanim, the main Tzadok. Nobody else. When they go on exile, Yoshua ben Yehozadak is going. When they are returning, his son is coming. And it's all detailed in great detail in the biblical library, although nobody ever reads it, because it is Ezra, Nehemiah, Dibrei HaYamim. It is all there. All that you need to do is just to open and look on the books or see in any good encyclopedia of the Bible under the Kohanim, the main Tzadok. Yes.
What is the connection of this
man,
Onias, calling us to the temple
of Israel in
Egypt?
Well, his son ran away to Egypt. His son is Onias IV. His father, Onias III, was assassinated, as I said, by Andronicus, who is the messenger of Menelaus or of Yazon. He was murdered in Antioquia, where he ran away to a place called Daphne, which was like a sacred place. And he was assassinated there by his own kinsman brother. And his son, realizing what's going to be his lot under this new regime of bloody rulers, he ran away to Egypt. Why did he run to Egypt? Because of a number of reasons. In Isaiah, we have a verse talking about Ir HaShemesh, Ir HaCheret, where supposedly a temple would be built in the end of the day. He's going there, according to the biblical tradition, that a temple would be built in Egypt before a temple would be rectified in Jerusalem, when there would be a great deal of defilement. He's going there also because the Talmim, who were ruling before the Seleucians, the Ptolemites, the Talmim, who were ruling along the 3rd century in Israel before the Seleucians took over in the year 200, the Talmim had a very good relation with the priestly house of Kadosh. They were those who sent the Chachamim of Targum HaShivim. In the 3rd century, where the Septuagint was offered, the people who sent messengers to do this translation were the priests from the house of Tzadok. They were in very good terms for a couple of centuries. So for him to run away to Egypt was a natural thing. He had a word with the current ruling Talmud, and he asked him permission to build a temple in Heliopolis, Ir HaCheret, or Ir HaShemesh. Heliopolis in Greek, this is the city of the sun. In Isaiah it's called Ir HaCheret. Cheret is also sun in Hebrew. This one of the old words for Shemesh is Cheret, sun. He built there a temple, and this temple was officiating until the 70th of the first century of the Common Era. It has been working for nearly 300 years, and it was an important center for the Jews in Egypt. Now, why was it officiating? Because nobody could have challenged the ancient authority of the priests of the house of Tzadok. That was the only place where they were officiated. You must talk louder. Well, they could not worship in the Temple of Jerusalem because there was no priest from the house of Tzadok in the Temple in Jerusalem after the year 175 as a legitimate priest. From this year on, from 152 until the year 37, when Herod is coming up to power, this whole time only Hashmonaim are officiating as high priest. High priests are only from the Hashmonean family from 152 until 37. In the year 37, Herod, Herodias, took care to assassinate every child, grandchild, granddaughter of the Hashmonean family. There is no more Hashmonaim after 37. But from 152 until 37, only the Hashmonaim are officiating as high priests in the temple, and they have no intention to let anyone of Bnei Tzadok to officiate them. So, later apologetic traditions. We're talking now on the Sagan tradition. This is 2nd, 3rd, 4th century of the Common Era. It doesn't have any bearing right now on our history because we are now in the 2nd century before the Common Era. What the Sagan say 400 years later doesn't make any difference to the historical situation. This is now that history is not... It's not retrospective history, that's history. From the year 152, we have numerous and ample substantiation for that. From 152, Jonathan, until 37, Matithyahu and Tikonos, there were only Hashmonean priests and kings and rulers, called Ethnarchos, called kings, called Basileus, all kinds of things. They were the only ones who were officiating in the temple completely illegitimately according to the biblical order. At the same time, there is a temple in Egypt which has very limited effect on what's going on in the land of Israel. It's in Egypt. It's in a place called Heliopolis. It is called Ir HaShemesh. The Onanis family, some branch of it, is officiating there for some time. That's Mikdash Konyot. It doesn't have anything to do with the land of Israel. This is like a temporary, adjacent temple. It's not instead of the temple of Jerusalem, because there is no such a thing as instead. But they assert their legitimacy as officiating high priests in Mikdash Konyot, in the temple of Onanis in Heliopolis. Okay? The sages had quite a lot of trouble with this. They didn't like this idea at all, but they didn't like it all the Hashmonean priests either. Now, one of the reasons that the sages are very loose about their criticism on priesthood is because they have those two families that they don't care for. This one is the usurper's illegitimate, assassinating family of the Hashmoneans, and this one is competitive power of full legitimacy. Only they have legitimacy out of the country. They are not in the country. So, anyhow, to make... Okay, short note, yes.
No, the fact that our only list were all the Kohanim who served until this point in history were all from the name of Zod, does that necessarily imply that no other family could, in theory, be legitimate?
Absolutely, because in order to be a Kohen, or Kohen Gadol, I'm talking only on the high priesthood, Kohen Gadol could be only those who were nominated by God as like Aaron Vanah. Nobody else. And only the direct lineage, the older son. The older son that is officiated and nominated like father, son, nobody else can be. Now, remember, we should remember quickly the genealogy of the family of Levi, according to the biblical history. Levi is one of the children of Yaakov, of course. Levi has three children. What are their names? Gershom, Kehat, Umerari. Hagershomi, Akehati, Amerari. Kehat is his middle son. Kehat is the only family that is going to be the continuation of the high priesthood. Kehat is the father of Amram, yes? Amram is the father of Levi, I'm sorry, Amram is the father of Moshe and Aharon. Now, Aharon is the son of Yocheved, who is the daughter of Levi, and Amram, who is the grandson of Levi. The Levitical family is marrying inside. I repeat, Levi is the father of Gershom, Kehat, Merari. Kehat is the father of Amram. Levi is also the father of Yocheved. Levi had three boys and one girl. Yocheved, the daughter of Levi, is married to Amram, the grandchild of Levi. And they are the... I'm sorry?
Wasn't it Yitzhak somewhere in the room? Kehat, the father of Yitzhak?
No. Yashon, Kehat, Merari.
Yitzhak, the brother.
Come to me. Very exact. Gershom, Kehat, and Merari are the children of Levi, and Yocheved is the daughter of Levi. Yocheved, the daughter of Levi, is the mother, is the wife of Amram, the grandchild of Levi, and they are the parents of Moshe, Aharon, the Miriam. So all the same. Aharon is the father of Eleazar, and Eleazar is the father of Pinchas. And as I said, Abishua, and number 14 is Tzadok, who is officiating in the Jerusalem temple. Moshe line doesn't count, because prophecy is not sequestered in genetics. I repeat, Moshe line doesn't count in biblical history. His children are not mentioned to any important their families or their genealogy is not mentioned, because prophecy, the highest degree of divine bliss or the highest degree of human achievement, is not genetically transferred. Priesthood is. It is only genetically transferred. This is no meritocracy. It's not by your merit. It is by idea of birth. Priestly is by birth. Only those who are the children of Aaron, according to the Bible, could serve as the high priest in the Holy of Holies. Now, since we have three families who are the children of Levi, Gershon, Kehath, Merari, their children are also Leviim, but Kohanim are only the children of Kehath. Gershon and Merari are Leviim, the children of Levi, Levites. Yes, there are 40 children, but Kohanim are only the family of Kehath. Only they are. Okay? The first child, like child father, the firstborn is the high priest. The other children are priests, but not high priests.
Originally,
Itamar's
children, I think.
Well, Elazar and Itamar, because there were a couple of children, but the family of Itamar is erased in the days of Shmuel and Eli,
right,
and they're not serving anymore. That's before the temple, right? In the temple time.
So they were working as if only the nations are allowed to, rather than that's the power of death. Meaning,
well, that's the way that they tell their, that's the way they tell their history. That Sadok is the one who is coronating. Yeah, the legitimacy is stated very explicitly in Ezekiel 40:48, but much before that, as far as the priestly perception of birth rights. Now, those families of the Gershonian family of Merari, and it's more that you may all remember the marriage of Nei Kohath. Why the Kohathim are rebelling? They say, are you the only one that God chose? We are also the chosen family. And Moshe, who is known as Anam Mikol Adam, who is the most humiliated and quiet and shy from all humans, is saying God would decide. So Aaron family is the one that is chosen for the priesthood. The others are secondary. They may not have liked it, they may have rebelled against it. However, according to the biblical writings, only the children of Aaron through the generations are officiating as high priests. Now, according to their history, that might be challenged by other families, but those who write the history are making sure to tell us the line of the Sadducees, the line of the Sadduk, Sadduk, Ahimaaz, Ahitub, and so on and so forth. Now this family, in writing its history and genealogy, they take a great care on their historical order. They say when they come in back in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, any priestly family who could not have provided Kitab Yochasim, the genealogical writing, could not have served, regardless to their degree. We also know that the whole entire priestly and Levitical body was divided to 24 mishmarot, priestly courses. We will come back to that in a second. However, all that is a background of this number 4 division. I said that the number 4 literature in Qumran, which could not easily be incorporated into every religious traditional book, is the library number 4 of the polemical literature. Books such as Milchemet Ne'or v'Nechoshech, the War of Sons of Light against the Sons of Darkness, that's the name of their book. Books such as Psharim, Peshel is an hermeneutical system that writes the present into the future prophecies of the past. A great deal of animosity, criticism, hatred, words, all that is in this literature. Psharim, it comes from the word lefasher, like lefaresh, to read into the scriptures what had been meant to say, reflecting the present, not the future or the past. Shalim and Milchemet Bnei Or, and numerous other writings which reflect that kind of animosity and struggle. Now, who are those fighting? It's very simple. The people who saw themselves as the Kohanim, Bnei Sadok, the legitimate heirs of the priesthood. are fighting against the Kohanim Bnei Hashmonai, who are illegitimate heirs. According to the Bible, there is no room for the Hashmonaim, for Mishmeret Yehoyarib. They cannot be high priests. However, they are. They have been nominated by the Seleucian king. They have been called Ethnarchos. Arthos is Moshe, ruler. Ethnos, this is people. The ruler of the people is called Simon, and afterwards Holkanos, and afterwards Alexander, Yanaus. All of them are illegitimate, completely illegitimate, as far as the Bnei Tzadok are working. For them, all this is signs of darkness. All of that is illegitimate priesthood. Now, what do? That they are illegitimate. They do one thing that for them is unforgivable and irrevocable. They are changing the calendar. When I said before, look on the board. When I said before that those three sections, the Torah, the Kmot Torah, and the liturgy, are perfectly beautiful, with one exception. This one exception is the calendar. Because all over this literature, they say time and again and time and again, we are asserting the solar calendar, the one which has 364 days a year, the one which has 52 Saturdays every year, the one that has every month has 30 days, the one that every year there are 4 intercalary days. They don't agree with any other calendar, but the Hashmonaim, who are nominated by the Seleucians, have to comply against their will or with their will. They have to comply with the lunar calendar of the Greek Macedonian kingdom. They don't care if they want or they don't. They say more or less, you want to be kings under our auspices, you will pay taxes and you will follow the imperial calendar, all the rest we don't care. They want to be kings, they want to be rulers, and they wish to do what the Seleucians tell them. None of those people, not Jonathan, not Shimon, not Hyrcanus, were any great religious leaders. They were all generals. They were fighters. They were doing a great deal as far as fighting, enlarging the borders of the land, conquering places, ruining places. They were great military supporters, and because of that military thing, they were sought after by the Seleucians for support. Nobody cared about their religious position. They cared about their military position. Since they were not deeply committed religiously, they said, all right, we'll do what you want, but we want to be the ruler. Now, of course, this is very hard, and that's not the usual traditional way to perceive the Hashmoneans, but that, unfortunately, is the source of truth. In the very same time that the Hashmonaim are fighting and assassinating and ruling from 152 to 37, the Bnei Tzadok are writing and writing and writing and writing, and they took with them the library of the temple. Oh, 3-4 questions. You were first.
But did you find anywhere in the Quran literature that it's okay to have a temple and outside of Islam?
Definitely not. No. Well, I didn't say anything right now. This is one branch of the family who ran away, and he had a very good reason to run away, because his father was assassinated by the illegitimate priesthood of that period. Okay? However, they don't say much about Mikdash Konyon, but they did not leave the country, although they are telling us in their literature that they ran away to Damascus. We have Brit Damascus, Megillah Damascus, Seles Damascus. They are telling us that in this horrible period, they ran away, they were afraid, and they went to Damascus. Now, Damascus could be anywhere in Syria, it might be elsewhere, this is a covenant, but they are telling us very bluntly that they went away, they ran away until Moed Tzedek came, until their teacher of righteousness collected them together and told them to come back and to return and keep the library and so on. Now, okay, that was one. Yes.
Too much. This was in the kingdom of Talmai,
the reading. 3rd century
BC. Did they have a solar calendar?
Solar calendar.
They had
solar, yes. Egypt always had a solar calendar. Egypt, for 4,000 years of the, like, you know, there are 20 kingdoms in Egypt, Egypt had solar calendar always until 43 before the common era, when Julius Caesar took over Egypt and then forced it to have the Roman, Greek, Macedonian calendar, which was lunar. So Egypt until the 1st century BC, mid 1st century BC, was solar for 4,000 years. I mean, solar was the only way, and for them the reason was that the Nile is overflowing once a year, like precisely in a certain day, every 365 days. The Nile is the only source of water in Egypt. Egypt doesn't have a drop of rain. They were monitoring the Nile with the utmost precision. They knew that every 365 days, the Nile is overflowing as a result of the melting of the snow in Ethiopian mountains, where the Nile is originating. And they knew that there are four seasons, and they were monitoring them very carefully.
Is it possible that this is Kim Jassus? Meaning, if first the Egyptians took over, and then the Sumerians took over, how do we know that maybe the solar, the original one, the winter, was affected by the solar, right?
Well, it could have been very well that the Moses period time of amalgamating the people of Israel that took time in Egypt, who according to the Bible, the Jews were living there for 400 years, were much affected by the...
Within the Greek area. Hmm? How do we know during the Greek area that the Kim weren't affected by the Talmud?
No, we're talking now on the 2nd century BC. The temple in Jerusalem has been officiating for 800 years. Various kingdoms have been there. The Assyrians, Babylonians, Persians, Madians, Parthians, Egyptians, and Syrians. So in the course of 1,000 years, just about everybody and his brother was going through the land of Israel, and everybody with his own ideas of time. But the temple was officiating according to solar calendar, as we would see in numerous examples. We are on our way to it. Yes, last question.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I think most scholars assume that Mesek is really Mashal, it's just a parable. It's unlikely that they...
Not really. I mean, this is kind of those things, you know, that one can say, maybe yes, maybe no. They say the Mesek. The Mesek is part of the biblical world. You know, this is part of the names and places that could be taken into consideration. It was very natural to flee to the Mesek, especially when you had to run away very swiftly and very hastily because your life was endangered. After Chonio the third was assassinated, they didn't take any chances. They ran away. Okay, so?
But it's possible because the Mesek is a parallel.
Let's say it wasn't the Mesek, let's say it was Rabbah Sammon. They left Jerusalem where they felt the pole, the throne in danger, and they went away. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't really matter whether it is the Mesek place or whether it is Rabbah Sammon or any other place. The only thing is that they said they had a time that they had to leave the country. They had to flee the country.
The fact that maybe the message is just a parable, is it possible that by the same token, maybe Tzadok is just a parable?
You mean the word they Tzadok?
The word they Tzadok.
Well, if you say that, you mean the whole
thing? It's the way, it's their way of saying that they are legitimate. Their way of saying that maybe they're inheritors of that tradition, but it need not be taken literally.
All right. Now, let's assume that is a position which one can consider. How would you explain a library of 950 documents? Can you imagine how hard it is to write one Torah scroll? One single one Torah scroll. How much work it takes to elaborate the skin, you know, the gvil and shalil, I don't know how you say that, the parchment, okay? How much time and sacred rituals it takes in order to write the names of God in the Bible, how much time has to be consumed preparing all of that, writing all of that. Can you imagine anybody can write 950 documents with the name of God, with the name of Netzadok, and to say that it's only a metaphor or a parable? I think it is unreasonable. I think, so what I say here is that if we wouldn't have had the 950 documents of Qumran, we may have been, maybe it's only a legendary thing, but since the library is there and it's very meaningful, and it's all, as I said, it's all sacred, it's all wrapped and kept according to the most strict directions of keeping holy things, I don't think we ought to doubt it. By now we know one thing. Somebody who called themselves Nesadok Kohanim wrote a magnificent library which has those four different kinds. Now, if we're talking, in again, very general way, let's say that the Torah scrolls that have been found could have come down from any period, from 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, we don't know, it could have been written very early, in the course of the centuries of the first millennium, before the common era. Of course it is gradual, but it is ancient. This part, the Kotova, might have been written any time in the course of the first millennium. The liturgy is very ancient, doesn't have anything to do with any polemic. This one is the polemical literature. That could not have been written a moment before the second century before the common era. So we have three kinds which are not affected by any polemic. That's 1, 2, 3. Number 4 is utterly polemical. There, interestingly enough, they don't call themselves Nesadok, they call themselves Sons of Light. In the non-polemical literature, in the blessings, in the words of God, where they have the name of God and all that, they call themselves in the most casual way. B'nei Sadok HaKohanim, B'nei Aaron, B'nei Levi. They keep saying it time and again, time and again. In all of them. But for others, for who have the liturgy. For them, it is very...
But they wrote them all of that.
Well, if they didn't write it all of that, the biblical heritage. They did not write Ezekiel. Ezekiel has been written in the 6th century BC. However, Ezekiel is the Kohen of Bnei Sadok. For Ezekiel, it's utterly clear that Bnei Sadok HaKohanim are those who are serving in the temple only then. The others are considered to be wrong. In Chronicles, it is very casual, it's a matter of casualty. In Shmuel, it is very casual that you say that Sadok ben Achitub was the one who took the, you know, Aaron HaBrit with David to
Yerushalayim.
In Shmuel, huh?
In Shmuel.
Of course, Sadok ben Achitub. You look in the Concordance under Sadok and you'll find...
They had no
Well, that's their library. I didn't say that they bought it all. I said that this is their library. My point is that in all those three portions, the Nesadok, Ne'ahot, Ne'levi, it's commonly scattered. It's not in any particular thing. However, in the parallels, in our tradition, some of those places are erased. Some of those places are omitted. For instance, in the history of the priesthood, in the Shmuel. Let's take a book like Shmuel. You know, Shmuel is a very ancient book. In our Shmuel, there is like an omission about the history of Elazar. What happened to Elazar and Pinchas? Where did Elazar die? Where was he buried? Well, it is your sort of Shmuel. However, in the Qumran retention of it, they have a chapter that we don't have. This particular chapter has been omitted. Now, it could have been accident, but this is the history of the priestly family that has been buried in so-and-so place. In Psalm 151, which is not in the traditional one, the Psalm 151 is the praises of a Kohanim Bnei Sadok. It's a particular psalm that is called Bracha Bnei Sadok a Kohanim, and so on and so forth. It's also in the book of Ben Sira. In our rendition, it is Latin, in the Syriac, in the Greek, in the 151 Psalm, found in Qumran, it is there. Now, we always can say, you know, it's an accident, but then we can say also, it's a decision. The fact is, maybe it's an addition, who knows. However, again, the one thing that we can say is that the literature that we found here, according to numerous criteria, is relating to 3rd, 2nd, and 3rd century BCE. Well, our tradition has been edited in the 2nd century of the Common Era. So this one is more ancient as far as Petrography, yes.
In which category do these people who have the library actually think we are beneath Nando? No.
They say, we'll read them, we'll see how they say it, okay? Okay, however, now, but the point that I want to make, and that's the thing I want to clarify, in this liturgy, and in this Kmot Tova, okay, we have numerous explanations about the importance of the Torah calendar, which seems that, you know, you never say what's obvious. You're saying only what's questionable. You don't say, look, today is Monday, a lovely day, there is plenty of air in the room. We don't need to say it. We know it, okay? However, one says something which is not clear, or it is not known, or it is disputable. Now we want to see how they start their passage. We want now to take a look on our reading. Has anyone came after this passage? Anyone missing? That's good. Okay, we want now to take a look on the reading compilation. And let me say very quickly what is it that we have here. Flip with me, page after page. Number one is the calendar in Hebrew that is part of Mishkat Maaseh Torah. Mishkat Maaseh Torah is a polemical letter written by the priest from the house of Tzadok to the priest of the house of Hashmonai. Most likely it's about 162 years BCE. The text is taken from Discoveries of Judean Desert, number 10. In the library, the beautiful Gottesman Library, floor 5, in the very first, how do you say, corridor. Like right after the first corridor that you can enter in the library, where the books are, the whole entire DJD are shelved, 40 volumes, which includes all the Hebrew origins and the English translations of every word in the Qumran library. As you step into the library, the very first corridor on the right side, next to your knees height above, is the 40 volumes of the Discoveries of the Judean Desert. They are green. One cannot miss, since it's 40 volumes, you cannot not see. Number 10, volume number 10 is called Mishkat Maaseh Torah, because this is the way the language that the person who writes, the priest from the Bnei Tzadok, he says, "Vezeh Mishkat Maaseh Torah Asher Katavnu Lachem." Those are the bits of the Torah that we wrote in. The first page of this letter is this thing which you have in front of you, and we'll read it together in a moment, okay? Second page is the English translation of this Hebrew page, so if anyone cannot read in Hebrew, one can follow in English. Page number 3 is part of the angelic liturgy. You don't need to do anything now, only to read the first line. Lamaskil Shir Olat HaShabbat 12 ב-21 לחודש השלישי. הללו לאלוהי משני פי. Every one of the songs of the Shabbat liturgy, and I'll read the translation in the following page, for the master song of the sacrifice of the 12th Shabbat on the 21st of the third month. Praise to God. Now, right now, I said before that there is only one thing that prevents this literature to be part of our usual Talmudic. It's this sentence. Because every one of those poetry, of those poetical writings, is introduced by a calendrical assertion. Because according to the solar priestly calendar, every Saturday has a date. Has a day and a date, a fixed one. For them, every Shabbat semester, every 12th Saturday would always be in the 21st of the third month. No other way. Every calendar, every Saturday, as I said, you remember I did it last week, the first Saturday would always be on the fourth of the first month, first one being Nisan. Second Saturday would be 11th of the first of Nisan. 18th of Nisan. That would be Saturday number 1, number 2, number 3, and like that, 13 consecutive Saturdays. Each one of those points starts with this kind of a sentence. Lamaskil Shir Olat HaShabbat 12 ב-21 לחודש השלישי. In our calendar, in our traditional lunar calendar, we don't have such a thing. We don't count Saturdays according to fixed orders. We don't count Saturdays according to 13. Like, there are 52 Saturdays every year according to the Christian calendar. In each quarter of the year, 13, 13, 13, and 13. There is one more astronomical data that I would like to add. Maybe, is that a calendar? We want to know the date of those things. What is the first of the first, the first of the fourth, the first of the seventh, and the first of the tenth? The first of the tenth. Those are the. Anyone want to guess what are?
What is it in the week?
No. I said already which day of the week. It's always be a Wednesday, yes? However, what is. It is the two solstices and the two equinox. For them, the first of the first, the first of the first month, like Alex Nisan, is the solar equinox and the fourth the solstice. You know, there are two things, equinox and solstice.
What did they do with yesterday?
I'm sorry?
What did they do with yesterday?
With yesterday.
Well, and solstice 365. So
well, I explained it already, but I will repeat on that in a second. But first let's understand that. This and that, and this and that are the solstice and the equinox. Equinox is when the hours of the day and the hours of the night are equal, and solstice is the day, the longest day or the shortest day. Those 4 days are the astronomical basis of the calendar. In every one of those, there are 13 Saturdays, okay? 13 Saturdays, and they start each Saturday by introducing its name. So what would be this 12th Saturday? They say, L'Amantiti Olam Shabbat 12 by 21 L'Chodesh HaShlishi. That would be here, let's say, 21 the 31, so the last Shabbat would be the 28th of the third month. Always, the 13th Shabbat, the last Shabbat of the quarter, would be the 28th of the third month. Now, whether we would say that this is 1, 2, 3, and this is 1, 2, 3, it always would be that the 13th Saturday would be the 28th of the third month. What do they do with the missing extra days? We found beautiful quotes which are called Megillot HaMishmarot. Every week of the 52 weeks of the year has been named under a Mishmeret. So the first week, let's say, would be the Mishmeret of Yechezkel. The second week would be Dlaya. The third one would be Pasach. They have those French names, those 24 Mishmarot. Each one of the weeks of the year would be nominated consecutively according to the names of the Mishmarot for a cycle of 6 years. So they would do, try to think on the two circles, 24 weeks and another 24 weeks and another four meetings. Like, three Mishmarot would be serving three times every year, okay? However, next year would start with Mishmeret number 4. In a course of 6 years, every one of the 24 Mishmarot would be serving 13 times. Okay? The calculation of these priestly courses is 13 times each one of the 24 Mishmarot would be serving in a course of 6 years. In the 7th year, there is no Mishmarot, there is no priestly service, there is no pilgrimage to the temple. Everyone is resting, like Shabbat Ha'aretz, Shabbat Shvita, Shabbat. In this year, only in the 7th year, where there is no one serving, a week is added after Pakhel, after Sukkot, in the 7th of the, after the last holiday of the 7th month of the Christian calendar, a week is added, quietly and secretly. They do it in order to keep the missing day, that's the second. However, in order not to forget how many days are in the year they call it Shemitah. Why Shemitah? Because Shemitah is equal 364. The only day, the only year which doesn't have 364 days, that's the one that has with extra 7, is called Shemitah. The numerical value of Shemitah, I hope you know to do, gematik, Shin is 300, Mem is 40, 340, Yud is 50, 350, 359, or 5, 360, the Alba. The only year that they say that if they use the word Shlok Moshishim Ba'aba is the year that they add an extra week. Okay? They don't say, they call it Sod Adonai Le'yere'ah. They keep it quietly and secretly. However, in Megillot HaMishmarot, in the priestly scrolls of the 24 courses, 4-6 years serving certain times, we see how accurate and how mathematical they are. That we found scrolls for hundreds of years. They were doing the pre-calculation of hundreds of years of priestly service. Not for 1 year, not for two, not for three, not for a decade. For centuries and centuries.
The
Megillot HaMishmarot, which are all has been published by Talmon and Ben-Dov in, I think, volume 21 of the TJP, one can look at it. It's very beautifully arranged according to the priestly, according to the priestly courses name, a week after week, a week after week, and they say the names of the Mishmeret who is serving in according to the holiday, according to the day. Okay, we won't go more than that. Very good.
I mean, very good. You have a calendar saying 25 and a quarter day, no?
Yes. So every 28th year they would end another week. Every 7 years in the Shemitah, okay, every seventh year in the Shemitah after Ma'amad HaKel, they would say, okay, don't come until we will tell you to come next week to the Mikdash in Pesach, and they would add the needed week.
Okay, so it's 28 days in that too.
Correct. Yeah. But
how do you know the mathematics are
wrong? Well, that's what they were doing. Never think that we know anything better than our predecessors. They knew mathematics excellently. Anyhow, let us look quickly on the next page. The next page is the English translation of the Angelic Liturgy. Next page is just, again, read only the first line. Lamasti shir olat ha-shabbat ha-achatishre ba-arba-sar la-chodesh ha-shlishi. Okay, just a second. For the master song of the sacrifice of the 11th Sabbath on the 14th of the 3rd month. Every Shabbat, and we're not talking now on the beauty of the liturgy, we'll have a chance to look at it later, but only all what we want to know now is that every day, every Shabbat of the whole entire 52 Shabbatot of the year would be introduced by Lamaskim Shir Olat HaShabbat HaAchat. Every Shabbat could be 1 out of 13, okay? Every Shabbat would be one of those 13 which always would be Shabbat Shishona would be number 4, Shabbat Shmiya number 11, Shabbat Shishi number 18, Shabbat Rabi'i 25, and so on and so forth, okay? So Shabbat number 11 would always be Ba'arba'asa L'chodesh HaShishi. Shabbat number 12, as we said, would be the 21 of the 3rd month, and Shabbat number 13 would be the 28th of the 3rd month, and then we start again. Okay. So this, yeah.
The whole explanation about the 4th, the 7th, the 10th, what does this do
with
this song?
Because every Shabbat has to be read in its proper day. They start the Shabbat, it's Tfilat the Shabbat. Not the 47th, the 4th and the 11th. You must have a span of 7 days from Shabbat to Shabbat. So 4, 11, 18, 25, and so on, okay? It's not clear? I said that in every quarter, look, in every quarter there are 13 Shabbatot. The first Shabbat always would be the 4th of the 1st month, okay? Because they start to count from Wednesday. Okay, Wednesday would be Echad, Thursday would be Stein, Friday would be Shalom, Saturday is Abba. So first Saturday of the 13th would be always the fourth of the first month. Okay, then we are crossing to these pages, which are called 4Q252. This is the Genesis Apocryphon, or the story of the Mabul, the story of the flood, according to the... Look here a second. This is what I call Kmo Torah. It's the story of the flood as we know it in Genesis 8 or 9, but it's different. Let's take a very quick look on what is it different. Beshnat 480 lechaye Noach, I'm looking on this page, you see? In the right side there is the English translation, you can follow it better, or in the left side of the book. בשנת 480 לחיי נוח, בא לקיצם לנוח. ואלוהים אמר, לא ידעו רוחי באדם לעולם, ויחתכו ימיהם 120 שנה, קץ מהמבול ומהמבול על הארץ. That's it, all said. But here we start the version of the flood story with one important addition. בשנת 600 שנה לחיי נוח, בחודש השני, באחד בשבת, בשבעה עשר בו, ביום ההוא נזכאו כל מעיינות תהום רבה, וערובות השמיים נפתחו, ויהי הגשם על הארץ 40 יום ו-40 לילה, עד יום 26 בחודש השלישי, יום חמישה בשבת. והתברו המים על הארץ 50 ומעט יום, עד יום 14 בחודש השביעי, בשלושה בשבת, ובסוף 50 ומעט יום חסרו המים 2 ימים, יום הרביעי ויום חמישי ויום השישי. נחה התיבה על הרי הוררה, הוא יום 17 בחודש השביעי. והמים היו הלכו הלוך וחצור עד החודש העשירי, באחד בו יום רביעי לשבת נראו ראשי ההרים. ויהי מקץ 40 יום להיראות ראשי הערים, ויפתח נוח את חלון התיבה יום אחד בשבת, יום עשרה, באשתי עשר, אשתי עשר היא בילב, באשתי עשר החודש, וישלח את היונה לראות הקלו המים, ולא מצאה מנוח, ותבוא אליו אל התיבה, ויוכל עוד 7 ימים אחרים, ויוסף לשולחה, ותבוא אליו ועלי זית הרך ופיה, הוא יום 24 לאשתי עשר החודש, באחד בשבת. וידע נוח כי קלו המים מעל הארץ, ומקץ 7 ימים אחרים שלח את היונה, ולא יצא לשוב עוד. הוא יום אחד לשנים עשר החודש, באחד בשבת, ומקץ 30 יום לשלח את היונה אשר לא יצא שוב עוד, חרבו המים מעל הארץ, ויצר נוח מכסה התיבה, ויער והנה חרבו יום רביעי לשבת, באחד לחודש הראשון. ובאחת ו-600 שנה לחיי נוח, וב-17 יום לחודש השני יבשה הארץ, באחד בשבת ביום ההוא יצא נוח מן התיבה, לקץ שנה תמימה, לימים 364, באחד בשבת, בשבעה, something, בשנת 600. Anyhow, what did I wish? What did I wish? What's the difference? What is there? Yeah. It gives you the date. It's the same old story as our Parashat Noach, only with one important addition. It gives us a day and a date to every story. So when I say Kmo Torah, like that, that's what I mean. It is like the same story that we know from the Torah, only it has a very meaningful. Now you may say addition or omission. I don't like to pass that. I don't know if this is an addition to the traditional version or this is an omission from the traditional version. Nor do I care. All that I want to know is that we have a tradition which is certainly holy, which is certainly sacred for those who wrote it, which has a significant knowledge that we don't have in our edition, in our tradition. It has dates. And what are the dates? Those are the dates of the 364 days, the very same dates which would correspond to the angelic liturgy calendar. The dates would be the same dates, because if you read it later quietly and you'll do the dates exactly, you'll find out that the dates which are mentioned, some of them are those dates. Like the Rishon LaRabi'i, or the Rishon LaRishon, or the Rishon LaRabi'i, those are the memorial days of Noah's story, which are the memorial days of of the calendar. Okay? I don't want you to remember everything, just the principle. The story of the flood, which is one of the most beloved and common knowledge kind of stories from the Pentateuch, is really, in this tradition, a story of a calendar. It is told not for the sake of telling us how bad people were and how bad was the punishment and all that. It is not about the animals, nor is it about the art. It is about how to write a calendar. It's like a pedagogical writing, telling us how a calendar should be calculated. Now this is an eternal calendar. This is the calendar, and pay attention, it is introduced in the very beginning of Genesis. This is not an esoteric, unknown writing. This is, as far as they are concerned, this is Genesis chapter 8 or chapter 9, the way that it should be told. Now this edition or rendition of tradition has been omitted or has been added in this particular tradition. Now we do understand that if we add or omit the data for the calendar, is different than if we don't have it. For those who believe that the calendar is sacred, they would put it everywhere possible. Now if we understand that, let's take a look on the first page that I gave you. And as I said, I provided English translation to each one of the texts. If anyone wishes to read in English, it's just in the following page. We should read it like this. Please take a look. One should read it like that, vertically, okay? One reads it like that. B'shishashar bo Shabbat. It's like we're missing a line. It says, in the second month, B'shishashar bo Shabbat. B'23 bo Shabbat. B'shloshim bo Shabbat. B'shiv'ah b'shlishi Shabbat. B'arba'ashar bo Shabbat. Now, they go on like that. Now, this is the very beginning of the polemical letter known as Mitzvah Maaseh HaTorah. That's where the priests from the house of Tzadok are writing to the priests from the house of Hashmonaim. The most important thing for them, before anything else, is to say that. They don't start by saying, you are doing that and we are doing that. They would talk about it later on. They would say, we dispute about the mitzvot, we dispute about the bones, we dispute about the way that you should burn the fire on the korbanot. We have all kinds of issues that we disagree completely on the purity laws of the temple. However, with all those disagreements, we can live and we can argue. The one thing that we cannot live with and we cannot argue is the calendar. Because if for us this is the way that in every month from Genesis, from the time of Noah until the end of the day, they would say in every second month in the world, B'shishashar bo Shabbat, V'b'ayitrim v'shloshah bo Shabbat, V'b'shloshim bo Shabbat, for that it is indisputable. They cannot give this up. Because of that, they left Jerusalem and they went to the desert. Now whether they went to Damascus or whether they went to Rabat Amon or whether they went to Jericho, doesn't matter. That was matters for them. In every document possible, they start by introducing their calendrical assertion. Now do we understand that? Now if we understand this one, let's read the English thing. Would you please read it like the first year?
Thank you.
Yeah.
The 6th day of Bet, the second month is the Sabbath. The 23rd of it is the Sabbath. The 30th of it is the Sabbath. The 7th of the 3rd month is the Sabbath. The 14th of it is the Sabbath. The 15th of it is the
Festival of Weeks. Yeah, Moed Shel Shavuot. For them, in the 15th of the 3rd month, always would be Shavuot. As you know very well, but in the Bible we don't have a date for the holiday of Shavuot. Okay, go ahead, please.
The 21st of it is the Sabbath, the 28th of it is the Sabbath, after it is the Sabbath, Sunday and Monday. Tuesday is added to this month.
This is like the day that we call the four Yamin Peguim, the four intercalar days that I said that they are called Arba Yamin Peguim, like the four missing days, which are the last four Tuesdays. We would call it like the day 31 of the 3rd month, okay? But they explain it more nicely. Yes?
The 21st of it is the Sabbath, the 28th of it is the Sabbath, And the proceeding will terminate 91 days.
Right. Remember that the word 91 is equal to amen. Apparently, the origin of the word amen is this 91 days. Yes. Well, that might be well. However, they like gematrix and they like words which have meanings, and it's easy to remember that for them, if you say amen, 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 is the number of days in a year. It's like 91, 91, 91, and 91 is, and of course amen has the munah and the omen and the met, all of it, but the word amen is like the 91 days of the calendar. Yeah, please go ahead.
The first of the fourth month is the Memorial Day.
That's the Yom Zikaron.
The 4th of it is the Sabbath. The 11th of it is the Sabbath. The 18th of it is the Sabbath. The 25th of it is the Sabbath. The 2nd of the 5th month is the Sabbath. The 3rd of it is the Festival of the New Wine.
That is Moed HaTirosh. You remember I mentioned that there are three Moedim. Moed Dagan, Tirosh, Veita. No. Dagan, Tirosh, Veita. Dagan is Shavuot, when the first week is coming in the 15th of the third month. Tirosh is in the third of the fifth month, Moed HaTirosh, HaShlosha Be'av, and then the last one is the Yitzhar. Okay, please go ahead.
The 9th of it is the Sabbath, the 16th of it is the Sabbath, the 23rd of it is the Sabbath, the 30th of it is the Sabbath, the 7th of the sixth month is the Sabbath, the 14th of it is the Sabbath, the 21st of it is the Sabbath, the 22nd of it is the Festival of the New Oil.
Yeah, that's Moed HaYitzhar, yeah.
The day after the Sabbath, after it is the
wood
offering.
Okay, now that's enough for us right now, but as you see, it's only a part of it, of course, but it continues on and on. But when you read it, remember, in Hebrew you read it vertically, because that's the way we found it. Now, as I said, for them this is the most important thing, the calendar. That's they start with it. For them this is the word of God. This is the foundation of religion. Now we want to... Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, it's not mentioned because we didn't get to get to the Chodesh Shvi'im. Of course it is mentioned in other places, but this is like a parchment. It was it's like a chelek. Yom Zikaron. Of which month? Of which month? Look, there are four Yom Zikaron. This one, the first of the first, this is Yom Zikaron number one. The second one is the first of the fourth, this is Yom Zikaron number two. This one, in our tradition, we call it Yom Zikaron Truah. That's the name of Rosh Hashanah. You know, you and Rosh Hashanah is not independent. The old name of Rosh Hashanah, in Parashat Muadim, with Vayikra, Vayikra Gimel, is Yom Zikaron Truah. This is the first of the ten. The first of the ten is the last Yom Zikaron. Yom Kippur is not Yom Zikaron. Yom Kippur is Shabbat Shabbatot. According to their calendar, it's always Friday, the 10th of the 7th. All the holidays are mentioned, but here the parchment is torn, so it's hardly mitri, that's all what we found. Okay, as I said, the full text with the pictures, very good pictures of the parchment, the original parchment, with the text and the translation, it's all in volume 10 of the DJD, you can take a look and see for yourself how it looks and what. But our point is, now, that is halakha as far as they are considered, this is time, this is Moadei Adonai. We want to understand now the mystical origin of it, okay? Now they pose a very simple question. Let's say, they don't say, but I say. According to the usual perception, we believe that the law has been given in Sinai, and from then on, we know very well what we ought to do. We have been told the Ten Commandments, the rest of the commandments, the Pentateuch to giving us all the 613 commandments that we need to do. They pose a simple question. Is it possible that the world was going on until the days of Sinai without law? Is it possible that nobody kept the laws from creation until the Sinai? What had the Jews been doing for, let's say, 50 generations before Sinai? Had they not known anything? Now, our tradition starts from Sinai. They pose a legitimate question. They say, what has been going on in the previous 50 generations? They write the whole library. And again, I don't know if it is old or new, if it's additional or mixed. Like I said, they add a whole entire new library, claiming that all the commandments, all the major important commandments, were introduced in the days of the fathers, and for that purpose they wrote the Book of Jubilee. In the Book of Jubilee, we are told that each one of the important holidays is attached to the life of Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Levi, and so on and so forth. For them, each one of the things that we are first introduced to in the final revelation, they know it from the days of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So they don't say that there are any different commandments. The commandments are the same with all commandments, only they are introduced within the first 50 generations, not starting in Sinai. Sinai, in their perception, is the final editorial work of what has been going on in the previous 50 years. Now, they need to ask questions. Who was given the law? Someone had to write it. Who was transmitting the law? Who would be the person that would be the channel of the law? What would be the answer?
Me?
Well, Medevi starts only with too late. Okay? We need the very beginning. Hanok. Why Hanok? Hanok is the seventh generation according to the biblical tradition. Now we want, and that's very important to understand, although we don't have much time to work on it, but we'll start. We want to talk on the unity of holy time, holy place, and holy ritual. For those who wrote this literature, the holy time is associated with Enoch, who was taken to heaven and in order to teach him the calendar. 3.5 books are written on Enoch. First Enoch, second Enoch, and third Enoch, and a good chunk of the Book of Jubilee. Enoch is the transmitter of this tradition. Okay, the word Enoch comes from the verb lachanot. In Hebrew, lachanot is to inaugurate, to begin. Until today, if you want to inaugurate a new house, you say lachanot. But, for instance, the word Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? Hanukkah HaMikdash is to inaugurate the purified temple according to the Hasmonean history. Okay? The word Hanok is the first one, the inaugurated one. What Hanok was the first about? He was the first person who was taken to heaven in order to be taught to read and write. He is the father of all human knowledge. But it's not a human knowledge induced by human, it's human knowledge dictated from heaven. Those three books of Hanok, it's about Hanok who was taken to heaven, taught to read and write, and first and foremost was taught the calendar. So Enoch is calendar, reading, and writing. Okay? That's the major thing about it. He is also called Ed. Ed in English it is a witness. In Greek it is martyr. The word martyr, martyrology, is just as simply Ed. Ed alaimuna, a witness on the belief. Enoch is called Ed and he is called Oth. Oth like sign, Oth like covenant, Oth like Oth ulola. The story of the holy time is the story of Enoch, who is bringing the calendar, who is teaching all the details. In the Book of Enoch, chapter 72-82, there are the exact details of the calendar that I've been drawing and saying in various ways. Now, if holy time is about Enoch, and remember Enoch is the seventh one, what would be the holy place? What would be the holy place? We're wanting to talk on the very beginning of things. If Enoch is the person who brings holy time, can't hear you? Well, Melchizedek is the person of the family, but I'm talking now on holy place.
Halabite
is fairly late. Halabite, as far as we're concerned, is like Halabite in the place of his temple. That's only from the United Kingdom period. But I wrote the holy place at the very beginning. Gan Eden, of course. Gan Eden, or which is also known in Aramaic as Pardes Kosta. In the Aramaic material in Qumran, they're calling it either or. Pardes Kosta, which means Pardes is like an orchard, but it is also paradise, which is Kosta is Emet Vetzedek. The word Kosta in Aramaic is Emet Vetzedek, truth and righteousness. Gan Eden Pardes Kosta. That's the very beginning. Next would be, where would be the next holy place? Yoki. And the next one, Mishkan. And the next one, Midrash. All of that together is overlapping. All of that is referring to the holy place, with one addition. They add to that, in the mystical literature, seven holy places in heaven. As far as they are concerned, there are seven heichalot in heaven. There are seven dvirim in heaven. We have one dvir, we have one merkava. One merkava is like the chariot of the cherubim in the Holy of Holies, in the tabernacle and in the temple, as I was mentioning. They say, in heaven we have seven merkavot, we have seven dvirim, we have seven heichalot. The sevenfold holy place is the foundation of the mystical literature of the angelic liturgy. Okay, now that is that holy place. Please understand. That of course is seven rekiim. Seven rekiim, seven merkavot, seven dvirim, everything in heaven, in the invisible world, is sevenfold. Now, holy ritual. What is that? Who is performing the ritual? Angels and priests, they are one. Angels and priests are counterpart one of the other. The angels are called in Qumran Kohanei Kohel. That's the word Kohanei Kohel. That's the way the angels are called. Needless to say that the word Kohanei Yasharet or Kohanei Tzedek or Kohanei Meshartim is the name of the priestly servants in the temple. So for them, the angels are Kohanei Kohel, and their earthly counterparts are Kohanei Tzedek Ba'atzim.
As you were speaking, what comes to my head, a phrase that the Jewish high rabbi by holy day liturgy, the PUD, as he said, sounds, as it went to my head, calling about a PUD that is the same, and what is the
There is a PUQ, the Indian Kohanei Kohel.
That kind of symbolism seems to be part of the rabbinic literature in the Middle East.
Well, I don't want to make broad generalization, but I would say that a great deal of the PUQ literature, the Beikuk Seder Avodah, has a lot to do with the Christian tradition. Okay? However, we would say earlier than that the whole entire body of Sifrut HaHechalot VaHerkavah about the angels and the seven rekim is exactly a continuation of this literature, only without any polemics and without calendarical assertions. Okay? But the angels and the priests always. So we have here three poetry of holiness. They are united. The correspondence and uniting elements between holy time associated with the segment of 7 days. The calendar that I was fully born is a calendar of Shabbatot. Every 7 days there is a Shabbat. The unit of holy time from Genesis 1 is 7 days. Okay? Sheva or Shiva Yomim. Now the word Sheva, seven, in Hebrew is Shvuah. Shvuah is an oath. Shvuah is a covenant. For them, Sheva is not an incidental number. Sheva is the word, the associated word with Shvuah, which is a covenant and an oath. For them, the covenant is about the holiness of time. because only the correspondence between keeping the holiness of time, the holiness of place, and the holiness of the angelic liturgy is the common denominator to the whole entire mystical perception of plurality. Now here, mystical priestly perception is informed by three traditions. Holy time associated with Enoch, solar calendar, what we have been passing. Holy place has to do with the purity law, with the strictures of purity law of death. Because what is the common denominator to all those beautiful places? Than Eden, Chaldea, Sinai, Mishkan, Mikdash. What's the common denominator of it all? It's where divine presence was once attested, or angelic divine presence was recorded, and it has to do about eternity and ongoing source of life. That's the reason that no death is allowed in any way close to all of them. The reason that nobody was impure, anybody was associated with death by bleeding, by kol tum'ah, zav, mesora, keri, nida, all those things are signifiers of death. Because of this, they should be as remote as possible from the Holy of Holies, which is the representation of the eternity, of the source of life. It's about life, all those things. Okay? It's about life. Now let us read very, very quickly in our reading. Excuse me?
Who are the Kohanim from the time of Hanoch?
Who is the son of Hanoch? Methuselah. Who is the son of Methuselah? Noah. Lemeth. Who is the son of Lemeth? Noah. Not yet. Noah is the father of Nir, that was omitted from our tradition. Nir is the father of Melchizedek. Melchizedek was taken to heaven to be kept as a holy priest until the days of Abraham. But what we want to take a look at second is on the way that the holy presence is described in the mystical literature. Please take the third page in Hebrew. That's Sabbath Psalm 12, and or if you rather read it in English, that is in the following page. And let us see how beautiful they are describing the holy place. Now please bear in mind the following assertion. That's the place where the demarcation between the divine, heavenly, and earthly are blurred. The only place, like Gan Eden or Paradise or Sinai or Mishkan or Mikdash, it is where we, as normal humans, are not allowed in. Our representatives, the priests and the angels, are there. We can only hear about it. We cannot see. Okay, let's see how do they describe this holy presence. למשכיל שיר עולת השבת 12 ב-21 לחודש השלישי. הללו לאלוהי נשיאי משני פלא ורוממוהו כפי הכבוד במשכן. אלוהי דעת יפולו לפני הקרובים וברכו בהרומם קול דממת אלוהים נשמע והמון רינה ברום כנפיהם. קול דממת אלוהים. תבנית כסמר קבעה, the third line, תבנית כסמר קבעה מברכים, ממה להרקיע הקרובים. הוד רקיע אור ירננו מתחת מושב כבודו, ובלכת האופנים ישובו מלאכי קודש, יצאו מבין גלגלי כבודו. כמראה אש רוחות קודש קודשים צבים, מראה שבילי אש בדמות חשמל, ומעשי נוגה ברוקמת כבוד, צבעי פלא ממולח צורה. רוחות אלוהים חיים מתהלכים תמיד עם כבוד מרכבות הפלא, וכל דממת ברך בהמון לכתם, והלל קודש בהשיב דרכיהם, בהרומם ירומם את פלא, ובשובן יעמוד. כל גילות רינה השקט ודממת ברך אלוהים בכל מחנה אלוהים, וכל תשבחות מבין כל דגליהם בעבריהם ירננו, כל פיקודיהם אחד אחד במעמדו. Next page, please. The next scribble page. That's the Sabbath song 11. Line number 10. After you see line number 1 is Lamatil Shir Olat HaShabbat HaAchatetre Ba'Arba'Atar LaChodesh HaShishi. 9 lines are missing and we're going to line number 10. Veshabchuhu Badanei Elohim Ruchei Kodesh Kodashim Merkava Levadanei Kvod Midras Zirei Tele Ruchei Elei Olamim Kol something Dvir Melech Maaseh Ruchot Vesia Tele Memulach Torah רוחי דעת אמת וצדק בקודש קודשים, צורות אלוהים חיים, צורי רוחות מלאים. כל מעשיהם קודשי דבקי תלם. רוחי רוקמה בדני צורות אלוהים, חוקקי סביב ללבני כבודם. צורות כבוד למעשי לבני הוד ואדר, אלוהים חיים כל מעשיהם. We would stop now, not pretending to understand everything that we read. I only want you to be impressed by the nature of the language, the beauty and the disparity between what we do know and what we don't. Many of those words are familiar to us. Where is it from, like Memulach Tohar? Me'aktor, from Hachanat Aktor. Many of the words are from Ezekiel, but some words are not known to us. As I said, there is English translation provided. Carol Newton, the courageous scholar, was translating it, which is rather a courageous thing to do, because we don't have the usual syntax or tradition. However, we would discuss it, we would continue to discuss it on Wednesday. And please, you do the reading referring to class number 3 and 4 as much as you can. We will continue, and please bring the reading packet because we are going to continue to read and discuss. What we have been reading now is the priestly mystical perception of the holy place. Okay? That's what they understand when they say Merkava, Echalon, Pardeh, Sinai, Mishkan. That is what they say. Remember, Ruchot, Emet, Vetzedek, Bechodesh HaKodeshim, Ruchay Kodesh, Me'ilu. Think about it.